Yes, though I still find it hard to think of anywhere as home now.
I know, honey, said his mother, and I'm sorry. It was no way to grow up being shunted from pillar to post like that.
It was hardly your fault. After all, what choice did we have?
I know, but I want you to understand that I wish I could have given you a normal childhood.
A normal childhood, said Valerian. What is that anyway? Does it even exist?
Of course it does. I had a perfectly normal childhood growing up here.
I guess, said Valerian as they rounded a bend in the path next to a stand of poplars and the river came into view. And I remember this place fondly, though too much has happened for me to think of it as home anymore.
That's sad,
said Juliana, pointing to an irregular chunk taken out of the otherwise smooth course of the river bank.
You remember that little cove there?
Water had since filled the cove, where it gambolled in miniature whirlpools. But Valerian remembered kneeling in the mud with a small shovel and a tray of unearthed treasures.
Yes, he said with a smile. I remember. I used to dig there for alien fossils. I was so proud of you, said Juliana. I am proud of you, Valerian. You've grown up into such a wonderful, handsome boy. My heart almost breaks every time I look at you.
Mother, don't go on, said Valerian, embarrassed by her praise, but enjoying it nonetheless.
I mean it,
she said more urgently this time.
I might not have much time left, and there are things I need to say to you, my darling boy. And I wanted you to remember something good from your childhood before I say them.
What is it? He asked, instantly alert as he sensed finality at the implication of his mother's words.
You've had to grow up so quickly, and I know that's been hard on you, but you're going to have to grow up some more soon. I'm not going to be around much longer.
Quiet, mother, said Valerian, kneeling beside her and taking her hand. Those doctors don't know what they're talking about. Not one of them has been right about your condition. You've confounded them all, and I know you'll outlive every one of us.
You're so sweet,
she said, running a hand along the side of his face.
But we both know that this will get me in the end, no matter how fast I run.
Please, said Valerian, his voice trembling, don't talk like this.
I have to. I'm sorry,
said Juliana, tears welling in the corners of her eyes.
Why?
Cried Valerian.
Because soon your father will be here, and I'm not strong enough to stand up to him any more, if I ever was.
This last comment was said bitterly and seemed to give her the strength to continue.
Your father is a dangerous man,
said his mother,
and I don't just mean to his enemies. He uses people, Valerian. He uses them and he chews them up, and when he's done with them, he spits them out. I wasted my life believing in him, and my heart would break if I thought you were about to become the same kind of man he is. I gave up my dreams for your father, thinking he needed me and that he'd come for me when the time was right. But he never did.
Why are you saying these things, mother? I don't need to hear them.
Yes,
she said, squeezing his hand with all her strength.
Yes, you do. You have to be strong enough to resist your father's influence. By all means, admire him. He has many admirable qualities. But don't try to be like him, no matter what happens. Be your own man in all things, and don't let him maneuver you like one of his chess pieces.
Valerian felt the strength of her purpose pouring from her with every word, as though she were channeling every last bit of her energy into making sure he understood her. He could understand the cause of her bitterness toward his father, but did she truly appreciate the grand designs his father had set in motion and the sacrifices necessary to realize them? Valerian looked into his mother's sunken eyes, seeing the pain and sorrow that filled them, and suddenly thought that maybe she understood the price of his father's ambition all too well.
"Do you understand me?"
she said urgently.
"Please tell me you understand."
"I understand," said Valerian, though in truth he did not. "I do. Father may be many things, but he wouldn't sacrifice his own son to further his ambitions."
"I hope you're right, Val,"
she said, opening her arms and taking him into her embrace.
"I really hope you're right."
They sat in silence for many minutes, holding on to one another and letting cathartic tears fall without inhibition. Valerian took a breath, then released his mother's skeletal frame.
"I love you, Valerian,"
she said.
"My wonderful, handsome boy. You are the best thing I have done with my life."
Valerian tried to answer her, but his throat was too choked to speak, his mind too overwhelmed at the thought of losing his mother. He wiped his eyes with a handkerchief and dabbed away the last tears with the heel of his palm. This was not the way of a Mengsk, he thought. A Mengsk was stronger than this, his heart a fortress. Valerian turned as he heard the crunch of gravel on the path behind him. Recognizing the diffident tread of Charles Whittier, who remained his constant companion still, accompanying Whittier was Valerian's grandfather, Aelin Pastur.
"What is it, Charles?" asked Valerian.
"I'm sorry to intrude, sir, but we've just received confirmation from General Duke."
"And?"
said Valerian, when Whittier did not continue.
"He wasn't too happy about keeping his ships beyond the outer shipping markers. He demanded to bring his ships into Umoja's orbit before allowing the Emperor to descend to the planet's surface."
"And I told him to shove his demands up his ass," said Aelin Pastur.
Valerian was shocked at his grandfather's outburst, knowing he detested expletives as a sign of poor upbringing and a lack of vocabulary.
"I'll bet that went down well with Duke," said Valerian.
He'd never met Edmund Duke, but his grandfather had told him of his reputation and how he defected to the Sons of Korhal when his ship crashed amid a ravenous Zerg swarm. Valerian had taken an instant dislike to him, recalling the teachings of Master Miyamoto and his notions of honor. As antiquated as such beliefs might be now, they still had a hold on Valerian's soul.
"I don't care how it went down," continued his grandfather. "The ruling council is concerned at the direction Arcturus has taken his Terran dominion. To say we're unhappy at the idea of a fleet of Dominion warships parked in orbit around Umoja is an understatement."
"And what did Duke say?"
"Duke didn't say anything, sir," said Whittier. "It was the Emperor himself who sent word." Valerian's head whipped up at the mention of his father. "The Emperor agreed to the Umojan conditions?" said Whittier, and Valerian could hear the sycophancy in his aide's voice.
"So when will he get here?"
"He will travel to us aboard an in-system gun cutter. He has arranged to be here first thing in the morning." Valerian nodded and watched the sun set over the horizon, the descending orb bathing the landscape in a russet glow the color of blood.
"Did it work?"
asked the armored figure standing in the doorway of the ship's bridge. The voice was muffled by the helmet, but the aching need was clear.
"It worked,"
confirmed the tech in oil-stained overalls hunched over a battered jerry-rigged comm unit.
"The stuff we got on Braxis was the real deal. I've been able to decode all the Dominion data links." "We got it all. His flight plan, IFF codes, full manifest, and arrival point. Pilot's already plotting us a course."
The figure nodded, hands curling into fists.
"Good. Stay on it. Listen for any more chatter."
"Will do."
The figure turned and made its way along a metal-framed corridor that led deeper into the starship.
The CMC-300 powered combat suit, emblazoned with the red and blue flag of the Confederacy painted on several of the armored plates. A gauze rifle was slung over one shoulder, and a long-bladed combat knife was sheathed in the leg holster. The corridor's walls were dented from small arms fire, scorched by the impact of ship-to-ship lasers, and corroded from bio-organic weapons of the Zerg. The interior of the ship had clearly seen better days. It was a miracle the ship was spaceworthy at all, considering the damage it had taken during the battle around Tarsonis, when Mengskin unleashed those hellspawn monsters on them all. The figure made its way into the depths of the ship, passing barrack rooms where Confederate Marines cleaned their armor and stripped their weapons down for the 100th time. There was no garrulous banter between these warriors anymore. The fall of the Confederacy and death of everything they held dear had seen to that. At last the figure came to a metal doorway and wrapped a heavy gauntlet on the shutter.
"Come in,"
said a voice with a laconic, almost liquid accent. The figure entered the room and removed the armor's helmet. Captain Angelina Emelian shook her head and ran a hand through her tousled hair.
"We got what we need,"
she said, addressing the man who sat on the edge of the room's only bed. His white uniform jacket was unbuckled, revealing a hairless, slab-muscled chest, and he polished a large rifle that lay across his lap.
"Everything?"
he said, putting down the rifle.
"Yeah," said Emelian. "The codes we got on Braxis are still active. They don't know we hit the base at Borealis yet, so they haven't bothered to change them."
"Excellent work, Angelina,"
he said, standing and buckling his jacket.
"Assemble the Marines and warn them this one's going to be hard. When we launch your dropship, you'll be going in hot. We won't be able to extract you unless you kill him."
"That don't matter," said Emelian. "As long as that bastard Mengsk is dead, I don't care."
"I know," he said. "Believe me, I understand hatred very well."
"I trained him, did you know that?"
"Yes," he said. "And that's why I know you'll kill him. You're better than him."
Emelian nodded toward his rifle.
"You sure you don't want to go in with us? I know how you like to use that bad boy."
"Not this time," he said. "Our new allies are readying another mission as well as the assassination of Mengsk, and I need to help them coordinate."
"Oh? And where might that be?"
"The shipyards at Dyla IV," said Samir Duran.
Chapter 18. The last time Valerian had waited for his father on Umoja, he had been 7 years old. He remembered his wide-eyed optimism at the thought of meeting the heroic man who stood head and shoulders above lesser mortals. This occasion shared similarities with that day, in that Arcturus Mengsk was now literally head and shoulders above lesser men. Emperor Arcturus Mengsk the First. It had a strange sound to it, as though it had not yet settled and was yet to earn its rank as a title. Valerian stifled a yawn and wished he'd been able to sleep last night. He told himself it was simply that he'd drunk too much caffeine, but he knew it was the thought of his acknowledgement as the Emperor's son that had caused his sleepless night. With the resources of the Dominion at his disposal, nothing would lie beyond his grasp. He could lead archaeological teams back to Van Osten's moon, or any number of sites that had recently come to light. The day had dawned bright and warm, as though Umoja itself were preparing to welcome the new emperor, and the sun was a bloated red orb in the coppery sky. Valerian stood on the lawn before his grandfather's house, dressed in his finest suit and boots, with his ubiquitous scarlet cloak that accentuated his broad shoulders like armor. His sword was slung low by his left leg, and a handcrafted blaster pistol was holstered on the opposite hip. He presented a perfect image of an emperor's son, and despite his mother's reservations about today, he could see she was pleased with how fine he looked. She sat in her wheelchair, wearing the most flattering clothes that could be tailored for her painfully thin form. Her hair was washed and cleaned, and even after all she had said about his father at the riverbank last night, Valerian could see she had put on a little makeup. Even those cast aside by his father still made an effort to look presentable for him. Standing with them was his grandfather, Charles Whittier, and Master Miyamoto, resplendent in his finest fighting robes, and behind them a line of Aelin Pasteur's servants. It had been Whittier's idea to have the serving staff stand ready to greet the new emperor, and though Valerian's grandfather had balked at the idea of putting on such a dog and pony show, Valerian had persuaded him that it couldn't do any harm.
"The great emperor likes to make us wait," grumbled Pasteur.
Well, the ruling council did make him halt his ships beyond the outer marker, pointed out Whittier, and gun cutters aren't exactly the fastest ships. A battle cruiser would have arrived here much sooner. His grandfather mumbled something under his breath. Valerian didn't catch it, but could guess its substance. Aelin Pasteur and Charles Whittier had gotten off on the wrong foot and had never bothered to try and find the right one. He suspected his grandfather was unsure as to which of the Manxes Whittier owed his loyalty, proving to Valerian that Aelin Pasteur was a shrewd judge of character.
"There,"
said Master Miyamoto, pointing to a spot of light in the orange-flecked clouds. Valerian looked up, feeling his heartbeat shift up a notch as he saw the glowing cruciform shape of an aircraft dropping through the atmosphere. Two lighter ships swooped protectively around it, flying figure-eight patterns above and below the larger ship. Valerian felt a hand take his and looked down to see his mother staring in apprehension at the approaching flyers. "It'll be all right," said Valerian. She looked up at him with a weak smile.
"Remember what I told you," she said.
"I will," he promised. The shapes resolved themselves from the clouds, and Valerian saw that the central craft was a heavy gun cutter, a wide-bodied, pugnacious-looking aircraft, long ago rendered obsolete by the development of the Wraith fighter. But it had range, and was capable of interplanetary travel within a system, so it never quite vanished from the inventory. With the losses taken in the war against the Confederacy, he guessed his father could not afford to be too choosy when it came to weapons of war. The other two ships were Wraiths, sleek air superiority fighters that could engage ground and air targets with equal lethality. The gun cutter slowed its descent and rotated in to land, its ventral thrusters kicking in as it approached the ground. Its bulbous engine nacelles were too wide to allow the craft to fit into the underground hangar, but the pilot contented himself with landing next to the platform's open hatchway. The Wraiths continued to fly overhead patrols as the gun cutter settled its heavy bulk onto the ground.
"It's never going to grow back," grumbled Pasteur as the cutter's jets seared the grass.
"You use robots to tend the garden, so where's the harm?" said Valerian with a smile.
"Not the point," replied his grandfather. "Lack of respect for others is what it is."
Further discussion was halted as the side hatch of the gun cutter rumbled open in a haze of steam. Smoke swirled as a dozen soldiers in combat armor jogged down the assault ramp and took up the position of honor guard on either side of it. A shape appeared in the smoke, and Valerian smiled at the theatricality of his father's emergence into the Umojin sunlight. Emperor Arcturus Manxk wore a long brown duster, edged in gold thread and brocaded internal lining. His suit was styled like a Marine's dress uniform and finished with a glittering wolf-head belt buckle. His boots were polished, and a long sword was buckled at a rakish angle on his hip. As Arcturus marched down the ramp, Valerian saw his father had aged, the silver in his beard and hair more pronounced than when he had last seen him. Yet for all the signs of maturity, his father was still a year shy of 40 and carried himself with the confidence and power of a man half his age. Everything about him radiated his absolute belief in himself, and Valerian knew that though in any other man this would be arrogance, with his father it was simply a statement of fact. The soldiers fell in behind Arcturus as he crossed the lawn toward them with a purposeful stride. Valerian noticed the shock in his eyes at the sight of Juliana. In that one quickly masked window, Valerian caught a glimpse of his father's fear of infirmity, and things he could not call on his fearsome intellect and power to fight. Valerian's grandfather stepped forward to meet Arcturus, his ambassadorial mask slipping into place as he shook hands with a man with whom he had run the gamut of emotions: admiration, mistrust, anger, forgiveness, and finally mistrust again.
"Arcturus, welcome to Umoja."
"I remember the last time you said that to me, Aelin," said Arcturus. "You didn't mean it then, and I suspect you don't entirely mean it now."
"So long as you're here in peace, then you are welcome," replied Pastor.
"Ever the diplomat, eh?"
said Arcturus, turning to greet Valerian. His father came forward with his arms open and his face alight with genuine pleasure.
"My boy, it does my heart good to see you. You look well, very well."
"I am, father," said Valerian, embracing him and enduring a series of hearty slaps on the back for his trouble. His father was at his ease with such comradely gestures, but Valerian had always found them awkward and forced. Valerian broke the embrace, and his father turned to Juliana.
"If you dare say I look well, I'll take that sword and stick you with it," she said.
"I was going to say that it was good to see you," replied his father. "But you look better than I was led to believe, so that's good."
"I'm flattered,"
said Juliana. But his father had already moved on to greet Charles Whittier and Master Miyamoto, playing the role of the approachable man of the people. Valerian saw the falseness of it, and wondered how others could not. Perhaps he was more like his father than he knew, able to see through the charade as if it were his own. At last his father stepped back and said,
"You are all very dear to me, my friends, and it means a great deal. After all we have been through together, that we should meet like this in the wake of my great triumph."
Arcturus came forward and put his arm around Valerian, pulling him forward to stand at his side before the assembled onlookers.
"We live in momentous times," said Arcturus, "but going forward together, we can achieve anything we desire. Father and son, we will build a better world for everyone."
Polite applause rippled from the serving staff, and Valerian dearly wanted to believe his father's words, feeling somewhat swept up in the grandeur of his vision for the future. Only Master Miyamoto looked unimpressed, staring in consternation at the sky.
"Are those yours?"
he said, shading his eyes from the sun. Valerian followed Miyamoto's gaze, and a hot rush of adrenaline flooded his system. 4 Wraith fighters, emblazoned with a flag of the Confederacy, diving in on an attack run.
"Everyone inside!" shouted Arcturus.
The assembled crowd needed no encouragement and bolted for the house. The 2 Wraiths tasked with patrolling the skies above the Emperor reacted as soon as their pilots realized the codes they were receiving on their IFF threat panels were a lie. But by then, it was already too late. The first fighter exploded as a stream of bright laser bolts stitched a path over its fuselage and ripped off its right wing. The second Wraith avoided the initial volley of gunfire and was able to return fire, Amazingly, the pilot's shots impacted on one of the attackers, blowing out the cockpit in a shower of superheated blood and glass. The enemy fighter spiraled toward the ground, plowing into the grass in a spectacular fireball, cartwheeling across the lawn and smashing into the house, drowning out the screams of panic that filled the air. Shattered glazing and buckled steel caved inward, and black smoke billowed upward from the wreckage buried in the structure of the house. The Dominion pilot's defiance was short-lived, however, as the remaining three Confederate fighters boxed him in and blew his craft apart in a hail of laser fire. Burning wreckage fell into the river, sending up huge spouts of water as it crashed. Valerian grabbed his mother from her chair and carried her close to his chest as he ran for the house, knowing there wasn't time to get her to safety with more dignity. Sizzling bolts of energy sawed across the lawn as the first wraith flew in low on a strafing run. Half a dozen of his grandfather's serving staff were scythed down, bodies blown apart from inside by the passage of violently hot lasers through their flesh. Valerian dropped to the ground as the ruby bolts ripped up the ground on either side of him. He tasted earth and blood and smelled the stink of seared meat. His mother cried out in pain, and he rolled onto his side, seeing her lying helpless next to him. The Confederate wraith screamed overhead, their wing-mounted weaponry firing upon the helpless targets below them. His father's marines returned fire on the wraiths as they fell back toward the house, but the pilots weren't worried about small arms fire from the ground. Impaler spikes sparked from the fighters' fuselages were missed altogether, but they at least gave the semblance of a fight back. The gun cutter that had brought his father to Umoja was powering up its engines, but before it could lift off, it was struck by a withering salvo of gunfire from the predatory wraiths. One of the engine nacelles exploded, spraying white-hot fragments in all directions. Wickering, razor-edged shrapnel cut down fleeing men and women in a bloody storm as the gun cutter lurched sideways. It plowed a huge furrow in the ground, throwing up sprays of earth and clods of mud as its one remaining engine roared into life and spun it around on its axis. The gun cutter lurched one last time and vanished from sight, tumbling down into the open shaft of the landing platform it had previously been too big to fit within. With one of its engines blown off, that was no longer a problem. Valerian heard someone shout his name and looked over the corpse-strewn lawn toward the house, seeing his father and grandfather crouched in the shelter of a recessed doorway. Both men were furiously beckoning him as the wraiths circled around for another strafing run. Valerian didn't waste time looking up and simply scooped his mother off the ground and ran as fast as he could to safety.
"Oh God, Val, I'm so scared," she cried.
"Don't worry," he gasped. "I won't let anything happen to you." The house suddenly seemed impossibly far off, as though his every step carried it farther and farther away from him. His father's soldiers were painting the sky with impaler fire, and Valerian risked a glance over his shoulder as he heard the distinctive chopping air sound of a dropship on a fast insertion run. A heavy lander in the colors of the Confederacy was dropping rapidly through the clouds, a mid-sized assault boat capable of carrying around 20 to 30 soldiers, depending on their loadout. Valerian forced himself to run faster, and suddenly he was at the doorway. His father grabbed him and hauled him into the house. The breath heaved in his lungs, and his heart rate was racing like never before. From 8 years of age, he had trained to fight with gun and sword. But this was the first time he'd been exposed to real combat. Valerian handed his mother off to Charles Whittier, who set her down on a carved wooden bench as Aylin Pasteur slammed the door shut and engaged the maglock. They were in the east wing hallway, a terrazzo-floored vestibule that linked the main receiving rooms and the guest quarters. Along with his mother and father, Master Miyamoto, Whittier, and Aylin Pasteur, there were 5 soldiers and a handful of weeping domestics.
"What the hell is going on, Minsk?"
demanded Aelin Pastur.
"Who is trying to kill us?"
His father took a breath and placed his hands on Valerian's shoulders, his relief at his son's survival plain for all to see.
"There has been some opposition to the institution of my reign," he said, turning and drawing his sword as his soldiers formed up around him. "I can only assume that this is a manifestation of that opposition."
"Opposition?" exploded Aelin. "This is more than bloody opposition. Those men are going to kill us."
Arcturus laughed in Pastor's face.
"Kill us? Don't be foolish, Aelin.
This isn't a fortress, Arcturus. That door isn't going to keep them out for long."
"They're not going to kill us, Aelin," repeated Arcturus.
"You sound very sure," snapped Pastor.
"I am," repeated Arcturus. "I may die one day, but it won't be today. Not at the hands of fools who can't accept their beating. Charles, what's the comm situation? I need reinforcements."
Charles Whittier, still holding Juliana Pastor upright, had one hand pressed to his ear, in which was nestled the blinking light of a comm bead.
"All the local networks are jammed, sir," he said.
"Our assailants appear to have cast an electromagnetic pulse net around us, and I do not believe any of the house comm units are strong enough to burn through it, at least not before we are dead. Also, I'm picking up hundreds of channels of white noise across a wide spectrum. Even if someone could pick up our broadcast, there's too much interference for anyone to understand the signal."
Arcturus nodded.
"They're using a Cassandra scrambler, so we can't expect any local help then. Well, we're going to have to look elsewhere for aid."
"There is nowhere else," said Aelin Pastur.
"There's always somewhere else you can turn," said Arcturus.
As his father spoke, Valerian pressed himself to the outer wall and looked through the glass panel at the side of the door. Flying shrapnel had punched a neat hole in the glass, and he saw the Confederate dropship hammer into the lawn, its skids gouging great chunks from the soft earth. Its assault ramp dropped, and a host of armored Marines emerged. They spread out and began moving cautiously toward the house in pairs.
"Incoming!" he said, turning back to face his father. "Marines! At least 30!"
His father nodded and addressed Aelin Pastur.
"Do you have a refuge here, a safe room?"
"Yes, in the Central Service Corps."
"Get to it. Take Valerian, Juliana, and Charles, and two of my soldiers," ordered Arcturus. "Lock yourselves in and wait for the cavalry. Understood? You three soldiers of Miyamoto, you're with me."
"Arcturus," cried Juliana, "what are you going to do?"
"I'm going to get us some help," he said. "The only comm unit strong enough to penetrate a Cassandra screen is on the gun cutter. If we can get to it, I can call in Duke and his boys."
"I'm going with you," said Valerian. "I'm not running."
"No," said his father. "You're getting to safety."
"I'm going with you," repeated Valerian. "That's the end of it. No argument."
Arcturus looked set to dispute him, then saw his determination. Valerian felt his heart soar at the pride he saw in his father's eyes.
"The cutter went down the landing shaft, yes?" said Arcturus.
"Yeah," said Valerian. "Its engine blew out and it fell in."
"Which means we can reach it from the house."
"Arcturus, that's insane," said Juliana. "Edmund Duke's ships are too far away to reach us in time, and for all you know the cutter's comm unit is destroyed."
"If I know Duke, he'll be halfway here already," said Arcturus. "Sorry, Aelin. You didn't really think I'd leave my ships that far out, did you?"
"Damn you, Arcturus," said Pastor. "You go too far."
Arcturus gave a hollow laugh.
"If Duke gets here in time, you'll be glad I do."
Valerian straightened as his father turned and handed him a gauze rifle.
"You ready?"
He racked the slide of the weapon.
"I'm ready."
His father led the way, and Valerian, Master Miyamoto, and the three Marines dashed after him. The flaming wreckage of the crashed wraith blocked their initial route through the house, but Valerian guided them around it to reach the concealed elevator in the main hall. The power was out. so they took the stairs, clattering down flight after flight in their desperate hurry. Valerian heard gunfire from above and paused in his descent, torn between his desire to follow his father and his need to protect his mother. He realized he hadn't even said goodbye, and took a step back up the stairs.
"Don't be foolish," shouted Arcturus. "We can only help them by reaching the cutter."
Valerian hesitated, but he knew his father was right, and headed down once more, taking the stairs two at a time. Eventually they reached the bottom and emerged into the system of corridors, maintenance caves, and stores of the landing facility. Wretched smoke billowed and heaved throughout the underground complex, and sprays of water drizzled from the sprinklers set into the roof. Valerian coughed at the acrid stench of burning fuel, rubber, and plastic, pressing his hand over his mouth to avoid the worst of it. He flinched at the sound of breaking glass and turned to see Master Miyamoto at an emergency fire point, hauling a trio of breathing apparatus face masks from within. He handed one to Valerian and one to his father before fitting his own mask.
"Which way to the platform?"
asked Arcturus, his voice echoing and artificial sounding through the mask.
"I don't remember the layout."
"That way," pointed Valerian, heading off down a side corridor, running bent over to keep out of the smoke. His eyes still stung from the fumes, and his mouth tasted of tar, but he couldn't deny the exhilaration he felt going into battle alongside his father. Valerian negotiated them through the network of tunnels until they arrived at the blast door that led out onto the platform. The neo-steel door had been torn from its mounting by the enormous impact of the gun cutter's fall and lay buckled on the concrete floor. They clambered over the shattered door and entered the cavern of the landing platform. The gun cutter lay canted at an angle, its fuselage torn open where it had been peeled back by the rock walls of the shaft. Smoke billowed upward from its remaining engine toward the bright oblong of daylight, and burning pools of fuel collected beneath the wrecked craft.
"We're going to have to be quick," said Arcturus.
"Damn right," agreed Valerian. "I don't want to get blown to bits by an exploding gun cutter, thank you very much."
"Yes, it wouldn't be a very epic way to meet your end, would it?"
said his father.
"Let's make sure we don't then, eh?"
With that, his father began clambering up the slope of twisted metal and debris toward the tear in the fuselage. As he reached the gaping wound in the side of the cutter, he turned and called down to Valerian.
"Keep watch above us and back along the corridor. If our enemies pick up the signal from the cutter, you can be sure we're going to have company."
Chapter 19. Valerian found cover behind a twisted sheet of the gun cutter's fuselage, training his rifle down the length of the passageway they had come from. Master Miyamoto took up position across from Valerian, and his father's three marines found cover that would allow them to enfilade the enemy. Eventually, their attackers would realize that their target was not in the house. Once the enemy marines figured out where their quarry had gone and what they were doing, they'd throw everything they had at them. Valerian and his soldiers had dragged piles of debris back toward the cutter to form rudimentary barricades and shared out what ammunition they had for the gauze rifles. The clock was ticking, but for what it was worth, they were ready. Or at least, as ready as five men could be to hold off 30 trained soldiers. The heat in the cavern was stifling, and sweat ran down Valerian's face inside his face mask. His breathing sounded incredibly loud, and his peripheral vision was practically non-existent. In frustration, he tore the mask off and dropped it next to him. The air was tight and oxygen depleted, but much of the smoke from the wrecked cutter was being vented up through the wide landing shaft. Not the best conditions in which to fight a battle, but whoever got to fight a battle in ideal conditions. And Valerian was willing to risk some respiratory difficulty to actually see the men he was going to have to kill. He wiped a hand over his face, trying to keep his breath shallow, and blinked regularly to keep his eyes moist. He could just about make out the echoing sound of gunshots, and wondered where they were coming from. Had his father and Charles managed to get his mother to safety, while his father's Marines fought back? Or was he hearing echoes of shots being fired, execution style, like those that had ended the life of his father's parents and sister? The thought that his mother was in real danger almost sent him running back along the corridor, but he forced himself to remain where he was. Allowing emotion to rule his actions would only get him killed, and that would do no one any good, least of all himself. He glanced up toward the cutter. What was taking so long? Was the comm unit broken? Was his father even now trying to repair it? How long had passed, anyway? Valerian found he couldn't even begin to guess how long it had been since the attack began. It felt as though several hours had elapsed, but he suspected that it was one at best. The elasticity of time in a combat situation was something he'd read about, but had never expected to experience firsthand. He felt the hairs on the back of his neck rise and looked over to where Master Miyamoto crouched. His former tutor was staring at him, jabbing a finger down the corridor, and Valerian felt his mouth go dry as he heard the clatter of boots and the bark of shouted orders. This was it. The enemy he'd run from all his life was finally here. But this time, Valerian Mengsk wasn't running. This time, he was fighting. He shouldered his gauze rifle and licked his lips as he saw shadows moving through the ruptured aperture of the blast door. Risking a quick glance back at the cutter, he silently willed his father to get a damn move on. A pair of Confederate Marines ducked around the edge of the torn doorway. Master Miyamoto rose from cover and opened fire, a meter-long tongue of fire blasting from the muzzle of his weapon. The first Marine dropped. Master Miyamoto's expertly aimed fire, punching unerringly through his visor and filling the inside of his helmet with iron spikes. Valerian pulled the trigger, working his fire over the second Marine. The recoil of the gauze rifle was fearsome, designed to be absorbed by a powered combat suit, which Valerian conspicuously wasn't wearing. The roar of the weapon was deafening, but Valerian kept the rifle on target, knowing that his target's armor would defeat all but the most concentrated clusters of impacts. The man fell as the three soldiers opened up as well, the additional weight of their firepower tearing through the Marine's armor and spraying the wall behind him with blood. Valerian ducked back into cover as return fire sawed through the doorway. Impaler shots rattled from the metal around him, and he flinched as a ricochet sliced across his arm. He heard shouts and rose once more, sending a blast of fire toward the doorway. Shots filled the air, smacking from the debris and rock walls as the enemy Marines laid down a curtain of suppressive fire. Valerian heard something skitter across the ground, and his heart leapt into his mouth as he saw a gently wobbling oval disc come to rest no more than a few feet from him. Without thinking, he dropped to one knee and scooped up the grenade, lobbing it back the way it had come. It exploded an instant later, the noise agonizingly loud, and the wave of overpressure swatting him onto his back. He scrambled to his knees, coughing and trying to force the air to return to his lungs. Valerian heard screams and cries for medics, sounding tinny and impossibly distant. He felt warm wetness in his ears and reached up, his fingers coming away bloody. A greasy fog bank of acrid smoke swirled upward from the grenade's detonation. Valerian felt around for his rifle, only now realizing it had been snatched from his grip by the blast. More blasts of gunfire sounded, but he couldn't tell who was shooting. He found his rifle and swept it up. The top portion of the barricade he'd been sheltering behind had been torn away by the explosive force of the detonation. Valerian realized if he'd stood to throw the grenade back, his upper body would have been vaporized.
Perhaps 7 Marines were lying screaming on the ground, ripped open, and their guts spilled out over the floor. Fragments of armor and ruptured body parts littered the ground, but it was impossible to tell exactly how many men had died. Shouting Marines tried to drag their wounded comrades to safety, but Valerian and Miyamoto gave them no respite, cutting them down in a deadly crossfire. Valerian experienced a surge of exhilaration and felt the urge to laugh well up within him with almost uncontrollable force. Amid all this killing and death, the sensation was ludicrous, and he suddenly realized how ridiculous this notion of battle was. Men who had never met were trying to kill one another. Valerian knew why he was fighting, to protect his loved ones and save his own life. But these Marines? What were they fighting for? A fallen regime that had lied to them and probably erased the truth of their own lives with invasive brain surgery? That was no reason to die, yet here they were, fighting a battle to the death. As he was contemplating such weighty thoughts, a trio of grenades arced into the chamber. Valerian saw them coming and dropped, cursing at his stupidity. The middle of a battle was no place to meditate on the absurdity of war, yet it had seemed the most natural thing in the world at the time. Strange what the mind will do in times of stress, he thought. Clearly the Marines had learned their lesson, and the grenades exploded almost as soon as they landed. Grenades explode up and out, so Valerian pressed his face to the floor as the enormous force of the blast roared over him. 2 of his father's soldiers vanished in a seething orange fireball, and the gun cutter lurched dangerously as the blast shockwave dislodged the rubble holding it in place. More choking clouds of smoke billowed upward, and Valerian knew their defiance was at an end. He heard the sound of charging Marines and the ripping cloth sound of sustained gauze fire. Impaler spikes zinged from sheet metal and neo-steel armor plates, and the last of his father's soldiers cried out in pain as he was brought down. Valerian coughed and rolled to his feet. He'd hung on to his rifle this time, and, though he knew it was futile, aimed it toward the Marines assaulting their position. A continuous roaring howl, like the thunder of the mightiest storm front, filled the enclosed landing platform chamber. Valerian dropped to his knees with his hands pressed against his ears at the overwhelming, unbelievable volume. The Marines in front of Valerian disintegrated in a storm of blazing light, chewed up by hypervelocity slugs and exploding like wet, red sacks of meat. He looked up to see the dorsal-mounted cannon turret of the gun cutter spewing shells from its quad-barreled weapon mount. Armor and bone and flesh vaporized under the holocaust of cannon fire. The sheer killing power of the guns at such close range was utterly terrifying. Valerian could just make out his father sitting behind the weapon, working its fire over their attackers in merciless arcs. Even as he watched, sparks and ricochets hammered the upper fuselage of the cutter, and Valerian looked up to see 6 Marines firing down into the landing platform's shaft from above. The armored plexiglass of the turret held long enough for his father to drop out of the gunner's compartment, but within seconds, the interior was a shattered ruin of broken plastic and metal. More shots rained down from above, and Valerian ducked back as impaler spikes hammered into the ground beside him. He felt a hand seize his arm, and, with his rifle raised, swung to face his assailant. Master Miyamoto slapped the barrel away, and Valerian let out a shuddering breath at how close he'd come to cutting the man down in a point-blank burst of fire. "Need to get into the cutter," gasped Miyamoto. Blood streamed from a cut on his head, and his robes were soaked with red at his shoulder and hip. "You're hurt." "I know," replied Miyamoto with typical brevity. "Nothing I can do about it, though." Valerian nodded and pressed himself against the buckled hull of the cutter. They couldn't break from cover. The Marines on the surface would pick them off.
Valerian could hear more shouts coming from beyond the doorway.
These ones don't know the cutter's turret is out of action,
hissed Miyamoto, guessing why none of their enemies were showing themselves.
That will not last. We need to move.
Yeah, agreed Valerian. Damn it, I hope my father got a message through to Duke.
Either he did or he did not,
said Miyamoto.
He should be here by now.
But he is not, so we still need to fight.
Always the teacher, eh? Said Valerian, scrambling around the edge of the cutter, keeping low and making sure he didn't expose himself to the marines up top.
Always there is more to learn,
countered Miyamoto.
The man who thinks he knows everything, in fact, knows nothing.
Valerian let out a laugh, though there was a slightly desperate quality to it. Despite the precariousness of their situation and the undoubted pain of his wounds, Master Miyamoto still found the time to dispense a bon mot. There, he said, bending over and pointing to a hole ripped in the cutter's underside. We can climb in through there. Master Miyamoto nodded, glancing back toward the doorway for any signs that their attackers were moving in.
You go first, said Miyamoto. I will cover you.
Valerian didn't argue and slung his rifle over his shoulder, dropping to his belly and crawling toward the hole. He jumped as he heard a blast of gunfire, spinning around in time to see Master Miyamoto drop his rifle and sink to his knees with a gaping, raw wound in his stomach. His former tutor's eyes were shut, and his face was serene as he crumpled to the ground beside him. Valerian looked up and saw a marine in scarred and dented armor behind Miyamoto and raised his hands. Entire plates had been torn from the marine's combat suit, and impaler impacts and shrapnel scoring covered almost every inch of the armor. The marine's helmet had been ripped off, and blood clotted the cropped hair. The hair was blonde, and Valerian realized that Miyamoto's killer was a woman in her early 40s, and even through the mask of blood, grime, and sweat, he saw she was exceptionally attractive. Was it better to be killed by a good-looking marine? Or an ugly one. The thought made him smile, and he giggled in her face.
Man, you are one crazy son of a bitch, said the Marine, limping toward him with a rifle aimed unwaveringly at his chest. I'm gonna enjoy killing you.
Valerian wanted to reach for his rifle, but knew he would be dead in a heartbeat if he so much as twitched a muscle in its direction. He was dead anyway, and they both knew it. As she approached, her eyes narrowed, and she let out her own bark of laughter.
I don't believe it, she said. You're Minx's kid, aren't you? With that face, you gotta be related to him somehow. Hell, we got ourselves a twofer.
I am Valerian Minsk, he said proudly, son of Emperor Arcturus Minsk the First.
That figures. You got that same damned arrogance.
Valerian tensed.
Who are you?
He demanded. Why are you doing this?
What do you care who I am? I'm going to kill you is all you need to know.
I want to know the name of my murderer, he said.
Angelina Melian, she said. I recruited your old man into the Marine Corps and taught him all he knows. So you might say, I'm making up for that mistake now.
Emelian brought her weapon up and said,
So long, Valerian.
Before she could pull the trigger, a blur of silver steel flashed and the rifle exploded as Master Miyamoto sliced his sword through the magnetic accelerator pack with the last of his strength. Valerian blinked away the brilliant afterimages as Emelian staggered and dropped her useless weapon, drawing the combat knife sheathed on her leg. She leapt at him with a feral snarl of rage. Valerian swept up his rifle and unloaded the last of his clip into her. Most of his spikes flattened themselves on her breastplate, but a squirting spray of blood arced from her neck, and she landed next to him with a gurgling scream. Valerian kept his finger pressed to the trigger, his breath heaving as the firing mechanism whined and the magazine clicked dry.
Nice shot,
said a voice behind him, and he turned his head to see his father emerge from the hole in the cutter's belly.
Thanks,
gasped Valerian, dropping the rifle and looking over to Master Miyamoto. Valerian could see the man was dead, and silently thanked his tutor for saving his life. His father squatted next to Angelina Emelian, and Valerian could almost read the expression on his face, part anger, part regret.
I never expected to see you again,
he said, and Valerian was amazed to realize the Marine wasn't dead. His impaler spikes had punctured her neck and ripped open her carotid artery. She was still alive, but had moments left at best.
I kinda wish you hadn't,
she gasped, her words wet and gurgling.
You died for nothing, said Arcturus. You know that, don't you?
Screw you, Minx,
replied Emelian with a cough of blood.
It don't matter now anyway. The UED are going to clean your clock, but good.
Who?
Said his father.
Who are the UED?
Emelian turned her head toward Valerian.
Damn, I was right about you, Minsk. I knew if you had kids, they'd be trouble.
Angelina, who are the UED?
Demanded his father. But Angelina Emelian was dead. The inside of the cutter smelled of fuel, burned meat, and iron. Valerian coughed a few times, then slammed a fresh clip of impaler spikes into his rifle. The craft's keel was buckled, and sections of deck plating had popped from the framework. Sparks crackled worryingly from broken panels, and spurting cables frothed with leaking hydraulic fluid. Lights flickered and fizzed, the electrics buzzing and spitting as the cutter's battery shorted in and out. The contents of stowage lockers were spilled over the deck, playing cards, canteens, fresh magazines, and the personal effects of the Marines who had accompanied his father to Umoja. Valerian braced himself against a groaning stanchion. Did you get a message to Duke?
I think so,
said his father, looking through a tear in the cutter's side.
You think so? Don't you know?
His father shook his head, quickly checking the load on his rifle.
The Cassandra Scrambler, it's hard to tell what goes in or out. But I think Duke heard me. I certainly heard him swearing enough to make me think he knows what's going on.
Do you think he'll come?
I do, yes. Edmund Duke may be many things, but while he believes he'll benefit from his association with me, he'll be loyal. And right now, he knows I'm his best shot at making something of himself.
I hope you're right, said Valerian, joining his father at the torn bulkhead.
I'm sure I am, said his father. If Edmund has a grain of sense, he'll have been keeping his senses suite trained on Umoja since I left the command ship. With any luck, he'll have come running as soon as he picked up the weapons discharges.
Valerian cocked his rifle as they heard the sound of voices from outside. He peered through a shrapnel hole and saw Marines, 10 of them, fully armored and loaded for bear, negotiating their way through the blasted debris that filled the chamber. Valerian and Arcturus were on their own now, and with only 2 Gauss rifles between them, Valerian knew they didn't stand much, or indeed any, chance of defeating their foes. He decided there were worse ways to end his allotted span than to die fighting next to his father.
We won't stop them all, said Valerian.
Arcturus grinned.
Speak for yourself.
Valerian nodded, emboldened by his father's attitude, and shouldered his rifle. The Marines saw them and charged. Valerian and Arcturus opened fire at the same time, their impaler spikes hammering the nearest of their attackers. The Marine stumbled and fell, but his armor protected him from injury. Valerian ducked back as a spray of spikes hammered the cutter. Tiny pyramids punched into the internal skin of the fuselage by their impacts. His father squeezed off a burst of fire and whipped back into cover. The roar of gauze fire filled the cutter's interior, a shrieking howl of metal slamming on metal. Once again, Valerian aimed his rifle through the ruptured hull of the cutter, opening up on a red-armored marine as he clambered over the remains of one of their jerry-rigged barricades. Impaler spikes hammered the man, but he shrugged off the impact and kept coming. More fire sparked off the cutter's hull, and Valerian knew they could not hope to stop these marines. Where their previous attackers had come at them with fatally misplaced confidence, these were taking no chances, operating in pairs and covering each other's advance with suppressive fire. Valerian slammed in a fresh magazine, his last, and took a deep breath. This was it. This was the end. And what better way to go out than in a blaze of glory? He looked over at his father and saw the same determination to make their ending one worthy of remembrance. "You ready?" he asked.
"I'm ready," replied Arcturus.
They whipped around together, rifles raised, and opened fire. And the landing shaft was suddenly filled with a cascade of incandescent bolts of blistering light that slammed down from above. Percussive explosions bloomed skyward, and the cutter rocked backward as a wave of heat and pressure washed over it. The tremendous impact shook the damaged vessel so violently its keel split in two. Arcturus and Valerian were thrown to the deck as the streaming torrent of light hammered the world beyond the interior of the refuge to oblivion. At last the waterfall of molten light ceased, and Valerian blinked away the starbursts behind his eyes. His ears rang with the concussion of the explosions, but he was alive. And that was something he hadn't expected. His father lay across from him, looking dazed, but otherwise unhurt.
"What the hell?" gasped Valerian, seeing nothing but blackened walls and complete annihilation outside.
Arcturus laughed.
"Told you,"
he said. Valerian looked up. Blocking the light from the open shaft was an enormous steel behemoth that floated above the landing hatch in defiance of the laws of gravity. As a monstrous rippling heat haze surrounded its engines, Valerian covered his ears against the teeth-loosening rumble. The insignia of a red arm holding a whip on a black background was emblazoned on either side of a cavernous docking bay, and it took Valerian a moment to realize he was looking at the underside of a Dominion battlecruiser. A voice, heavily accented and with a thick drawl, blared from an external loudspeaker.
"Someone order a heroic rescue," said General Edmund Duke.
In the immediate aftermath of the fighting, no clue could be found as to how these Confederate diehards had managed to learn the particulars of the Emperor's visit to Umoja. Nor could any light be shed on the identity or allegiance of the UED that Angelina Emelian had spoken of before her death, though this mystery would have a bloody answer soon enough. Arcturus promised Aelin Pasteur that a full and thorough investigation would be undertaken, and, while no direct accusations were made, it was clear the Emperor suspected the Umojans of a degree of complicity in the attack. More Dominion ships were on their way to the Emperor, and in response, capital ships of the Protectorate were en route to persuade him that it would be in his best interests to withdraw them as soon as possible. The survivors of the attack gathered in Aelin Pasteur's cavernous dining room, shaken and bloodied, but glad to be alive. When Valerian saw his mother, he raced toward her, dropping his rifle and embracing her as she wept tears of joy to see him alive.
"I thought you were dead," she sobbed.
"I'm a Mensk," he said. "We don't die easy."
Endings. But first, we have to bury her. Valerian sat in the leather armchair before the dying coal fire, swirling another tawny port in his glass, as his father poured himself another rich amber brandy. That wasn't his usual drink of choice, but he'd always drunk brandy when in Aelin Pasteur's home, and didn't see any need to change now. The funeral service of Juliana Pasteur had been brief, but dignified. Attended by the majority of the Imogen ruling council and a few of the Emperor's closest advisers. Aelin Pasteur had read his daughter's eulogy, and no one had been surprised when he did not ask Arcturus to say anything. Valerian had planned to speak, but when the moment came, he had been unable to move. Such was the weight of grief pinning him to his seat. His mother's death was the most painful thing Valerian had ever endured. It had taken a further 18 months after the attack on her father's house for her to die. Her last breath taken a month before Valerian's 21st birthday. It had not been an easy death. Her last year had been spent confined to bed, with only infrequent bouts of lucidity. Valerian had spent those months at her side, holding her hand, mopping her brow, and reading passages from Poems of the Twilight Stars. Often she forgot who he was, or believed him to be her long-lost love, Arcturus, her great and glorious prince. That had been hard to bear, for she recalled a man who no longer existed, if he ever had. Her last morning had been glorious, the sun a brilliant bronze disk in the sky, and the wind fresh off the river, carrying scents of far-off provinces and the promise of undiscovered countries. Valerian had opened the curtains and said, "It's wonderful out there today."
"You should go for a run," replied his mother. "It's been so long since you went outside."
"Maybe I will," he answered. "Later." She nodded and propped herself up in bed. Though her illness had robbed his mother of much of her former beauty, the copper light from the newly risen sun bathed her in a pearlescent glow that most healthy people, never mind cancer sufferers, could only dream of. "You look beautiful today," said Valerian. She smiled and said,
"Sit with me."
Valerian sat in the chair next to her bed, but she shook her head.
"No, on the bed."
He did as he was bid, and she slipped her arms around him, pulling him to her as she had done so many times when he was a little boy. She stroked his golden hair and kissed his forehead.
"My dear boy,"
she said,
"you are everything I wished for. Do you remember that day beside the river before the attack on your grandfather's house?"
"Yeah, I remember. What about it?"
"Do you remember what I said to you there?"
"I do," he said, wary as to where this conversation was going.
"You've been so good to me since then, honey, but it's time for you to live your own life now. You can't be tied to me anymore."
"What do you mean?"
"I mean that it's time for you to be your own man now, Val,"
said his mother urgently, and he could hear her heartbeat flutter like a caged bird in her chest.
"You tried so hard to make it better and fought against something that can't be fought. But it's time to let go."
"No," he said, tears gathering in his eyes as he held her tightly.
"You have to,"
said Juliana.
"Acceptance is the only way you can defeat death, my beautiful boy. I've made peace with it, and now you have to as well. Tell me you understand."
Valerian closed his eyes, unwilling to say the words, but knowing that she was right. He had fought against the inevitable for so long that he had forgotten there was nothing he could do to prevent it. His mother was dying, and part of him would die with her, but so long as he lived, part of her would live on. That was her legacy to him. Her goodness and her compassion had always been part of his character, her life and beauty and vitality part of his soul. But so, too, was his father's ruthlessness and determination to succeed at any cost. Those qualities passed on by his parents had blended within him to make him who he was. And only now did he understand what that meant. He was neither his mother nor his father. He was Valerian Mengsk, with all the qualities and faults such a state of being entailed. The things he had inherited and learned from both of them would forever guide his steps, but the final choice of where his life would lead was down to him. "I understand," he said, and he knew she felt the truth of his words.
"I know you do, my dear. You make me so proud."
"I love you," he said, as tears streamed freely down his face.
"I love you too, Valerian,"
said his mother. Those had been the final words she said to him, her heart finally giving out as she held him on that last glorious morning on Umoja. Valerian had stood and folded her arms in her lap, smiling at the serenity he saw in her, the lines of care, worry, and pain erased from her face in death. She was at peace, and she was beautiful. His father had come to Umoja a week later, and they had circled one another like the largest wolves in a pack, each gauging the other's strength as mourners arrived for the funeral. Now, with the burial concluded and the guests sipping expensive wine and eating canapes, father and son retired to Valerian's study.
"Your grandfather spoke well,"
said his father, pouring a glass of brandy and taking the seat opposite Valerian.
"It was a moving eulogy."
"Yes, but you'd expect that," said Valerian, his voice hollow and empty. "What with him being a politician?"
"I suppose so," agreed Arcturus.
"So?" said Valerian, when his father lapsed into silence. "You were going to tell me of Korhal, of your father, and my mother."
"Yes,"
mused Arcturus, swilling brandy around his glass.
"Are you sitting comfortably?"
His father then went on to speak for several hours, telling him of his youth on Korhal, his time with the Confederate Marine Corps, and what had transpired between him and Juliana. Valerian had been surprised by his father's candor, but soon realized that Arcturus Mengsk had no need to lie to anyone any more. His father had done most of the talking, but as the tale had caught up to the present, Valerian had spoken, injecting his father's story with his own memories. At the conclusion of the narrative, both men lapsed into silence. It was a silence that wasn't uncomfortable, simply a space between two men who had not yet decided what to say to one another. Valerian broke the silence first.
"I won't be like you," he said.
"I'm not asking you to be like me,"
said his father, taking a mouthful of brandy.
"I never wanted that. I just wanted you to be someone I could be proud of."
"And are you proud of me?" His father considered the question for a moment before answering.
"Yes, I am proud of you. You are intelligent and have courage, two qualities that will get you far in this galaxy. But you have more than that, Valerian. You have greatness within you, just as I do. And everything we have talked about today only reaffirms my belief that we Mengsks are made for greater things than the common herd can expect of their lives."
"I am my own man, father, and I'll not live my life in your shadow." His father chuckled.
"Nor do I expect you to. Ah, Valerian, so many of the things you say remind me of the arguments I had with my father all those years ago."
Arcturus stood and drained the last of his brandy.
"Sometimes I think we're doomed to repeat the mistakes of our fathers throughout eternity."
"I won't make the same mistakes you made," promised Valerian.
"No, I'm sure you won't,"
agreed Arcturus.
"You'll make new ones."
"That's not very reassuring."
"It wasn't meant to be, son,"
said Arcturus.
"Now come on. Pull yourself together. We have an empire to build."
This is Neil Kaplan. We hope you have enjoyed this unabridged production of I, Mengsk by Graham McNeil. This program was produced by Dion Audio Services. Executive producer, Byron Parnell. Text copyright 2017 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. Production copyright 2018 by Blizzard Entertainment, Inc. All rights reserved. Thank you for listening.
Audible hopes you have enjoyed this program.